Okay, let's see if I, there we go. Well, hello, and thank you, ICAO, thank you, Blondine, for welcoming me here today. I have, to be totally honest, in the spirit of full disclosure, just arrived about an hour ago, flew in, and over the past 24 hours since the Carrie Lieberman bill was released down in D.C., our AIDA group has been frantically looking at the bill, the ins and outs, and we have a webinar that will be presented to our members tomorrow, and it's about a 987-page bill, climate and energy legislation. So it's not just a quick little read-through. International Emissions Trading Association, I'm the Canadian director located in Toronto. We try to be the premier voice in emissions trading schemes around the world. The Canadian office just opened up probably about 2.5-3 months ago now. And we're also located in D.C., in Brussels, Geneva, across the world. So I have very little time now, probably 9 minutes, to go over emissions trading. The very basics, and then do a quick world tour of what is kind of happening in the emissions trading world. And I have no doubt that my fellow panelists will be elaborating on some of these different programs and provide some good news and some bad news and potentially some ugly news on emissions trading. So the very basics, cap and trade. I have geared this more towards maybe some of the regulated entities, or the industrial people in the office, or in the office, sorry, in the audience. So bear with me. So cap and trade, the very basics. Under cap and trade, there's no specific technology requirement, no emission rate limit, no reduction requirement, no emission tonnage limit. It's the affected sources, they must retire allowances equal to their total emissions. If you cannot afford allowances or offsets, so these compliance units, you cannot emit. And if you cannot emit, you cannot operate. It does seem simple at first, but there are challenging political issues and that must be addressed, and particularly regarding the allocation of those allowances. So full auction or gratis or a combination thereof. There will, you know, domestic offset opportunities are typically limited, so what's the political story around going to the international space? I know that you did cover the carbon market world prior to lunch, so hopefully you had some, you're ready with that kind of carbon market info and details. So the cap in a program, it will establish a tonnage of cap for emissions for the defined regulated sectors. So is that utilities or manufacturing or aviation? The allowances, these are the permits to actually emit, in this context, a ton of greenhouse gas or a ton of carbon dioxide equivalent. At the end of the compliance period, that compliance period could be a year, 2 years, each regulated entity must hold those allowances equal to its actual emissions. Then the trading component. Entities can purchase or sell those allowances or offsets as part of their compliance strategy to meeting their targets. The underlying principle of emissions trading, cap and trade 101, high cost of control entities can purchase allowances. Low cost of control entities will abate through internal abatement, energy efficiency improvements, what have you. No entity pays more than the market price for allowances, so the cost per ton of carbon dioxide to emit in order to comply with regulation. The total cost overall through the program is minimized. So as an industry who will potentially be regulated under emissions trading scheme, compliance with cap and trade, it becomes an economic judgment. Given the available compliance options that are available to you, and that would be through offset mechanisms or a technology fund like Canada had proposed a little while ago, or other compliance mechanisms, what direct reductions? So those internal reductions can be made at a cost per ton, carbon dioxide equivalent cost below the market price, so the carbon price. In theory, and I'm sorry that I am speeding through this, in theory, entities apply the lower cost compliance options, then purchase those allowance and offsets to satisfy the remaining obligation. Entity identifies the available emission reduction options, internal abatement, once again, and understands their overall cost impacts associated with those options. They must have an accurate view of the future allowance market. So what is the purpose of a cap and trade system? Here are some unavoidable truths. The purpose is to deliver a proportion of a national absolute emission reduction target at the least economic cost. Least economic cost to society, to the community, everything. So it is the cost-effective approach. Not so much an emissions reduction measure as a way of ensuring that given the level of emission reductions, given the level of emission reduction required, that commitment, it's met as efficiently as possible. In the case of absolute targets, rather than intensity-based targets, like you would see being proposed under Copenhagen for some developing countries, or even in Alberta, the province of Alberta right now, it implies subordinating the achievement of economic growth to a climate goal in order to actually allow economic growth to continue in the future. But flexible implementation of the target, it can be minimized. It can minimize the impact on that growth. Another unavoidable truth, carbon has never been paid for in the past. Well, not until maybe 2005. And now it must be. So this inevitably causes some economic dislocation. Political issues arise, there's pushback from various sectors. And, you know, cost increases hurt. And by doing so, they do motivate change, and the system is intended to change outputs and not reflect them. So my stormy weather slide. How am I doing? Okay, wonderful. Because we're going on a tour now. So as you can see, there are lots of developments around the world. And I do want to mention that market-based mechanisms in general, like any market, supply and demand will drive the price of carbon. So what are your demand determinants under that mechanism? It will be the cap. What is the size of that economy-wide cap? You know, what are the technologies that are available and can be brought online? And you know, what is the state of those readiness, whether it's renewables or carbon capture and sequestration? What is the market demand for services that create GHG emissions? On the supply side of the equation, you know, what is the availability of those domestic and international offsets? Is there a price collar in the design of the actual emissions trading scheme? So is there a price ceiling or a floor or a reserve? What other cost containment mechanisms are available? And like any market-based program, it's all about markets. So allowance market, it will set the price of compliance. Allowance prices will change fuel prices, electricity, gas. Compliance costs will change production and product costs. Cost changes will impact markets and behavior. So that is, I just wanted to provide a little bit of that. And okay, so trading. The word trade has kind of been a little demonized, maybe recently. It's been a tough haul, I think, for a few reasons. And when we thought probably about a year ago that emissions trading was going full on, and regions around the world were putting things in place, and Copenhagen was just around the corner, there was optimism. And when you had U.S. with Waxman-Markey and Kerry Boxer bills in Congress, and they were getting some traction, it was looking pretty positive. Today, not as much, not as much at all, but there are still some promising stories. So the U.S. development, like I said, yesterday the Kerry-Lieberman bill was released, and this is an economy-wide cap-and-trade system. It starts out with utilities that will be covered, and then it looks at manufacturing, so that starts in 2013, and then manufacturing in 2016. And I won't go into more details. The fact of the matter is, it really looks like it will be very, very hard to see this bill actually pass this year before the midterm elections are called. So as much as it's been a great amount of effort between Kerry Lieberman and then Graham, it doesn't look as promising that we'll see something pass in the U.S. And the U.S., in a lot of ways, is the engine for what we'll see on the emissions trading stage globally. So some stormy weathers there. I just hope that they're animated in the right way. Okay, so some stormy weather's there, but what you do have also in North America are these regional emissions trading systems that are happening. So the Western Climate Initiative, then there's the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and you know, Western Climate Initiative has 11 members, most of Canada, and they're looking for a 2012 launch date. RGGI has been in place since 2009. And however, if a federal program does come into play, it looks like those state programs would be preempted. So Canada federally is a different story. It is just waiting to see what's going on in Washington, D.C. And it is ready and waiting to just jump on whatever Washington, D.C. does. Their emission reduction, their emission reductions by 2020 will be 70% below 2005 levels by 2020, the same as the U.S. So, Australia, we had a tough week. Was it last week or the week before? The CPRS, it had gotten to Parliament. It was ready to go, and unfortunately, just short of becoming law, Minister Rudd had delayed plans to introduce the program in mid-2011. So then we have 1 minute, and then we have 1 minute. So the UK, you'll hear all about, there's a little stormy weather, there's some fraud, there was some recycling of SIRS, but I'm sure there's some sunny weather on the way. And Africa, there's lots of CDM stuff going on. And in India, you have a lot of movement in there as well. Final thoughts on emissions trading. Today, the emissions trading landscape is a good news, bad news story. Some OECD countries are slowing down in the face of fierce political opposition. However, objections are, in fact, to do anything significant on climate change. It's not the emissions trading, the use of emissions trading as an instrument. Emissions trading remains a key weapon in that policy mix to achieve emission reductions, and that is at the least cost. But a uniform global scheme is a long way off. A lot of action taking place at the subnational levels. So the key is how will those programs eventually become linked, if they can become linked, to have a uniform global carbon price. And some larger developing countries are actually considering experimenting with forms of sectoral trading and intensity-based schemes. So there you go. Thank you very much. And I'm more than happy to answer questions later on or send you additional information on emissions trading and schemes. Thank you.